Coming up on KUCB News, an air carrier that flew charters to Unalaska this fall has had a fatal plane crash in another part of the state. And former Mayor Frank Kelty has officially left Unalaska for retirement. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. Three people died in a plane crash last weekend in South Central Alaska. Security Aviation was flying from Anchorage to Seward to pick up a medevac patient when its twin engine Navajo went down. Ken Marsh is a spokesperson for the Alaska State Troopers. He says the troopers flew over the crash site with an investigator from the National Transportation Safety Board.
You know, you could see the nature of the crash and the fact that there was a subsequent fire. And there was just no signs of life when they flew over, so it seemed fairly clear at the time.
Climbers with the Alaska Mountain Rescue Group recovered the bodies in mountainous terrain west of Cooper Landing. Two of the victims were Medevac Alaska employees Robert Kartner and Maddox Burtz, according to a social media post from the Air Ambulance Service. Security Aviation identified its pilot as Glenn Moorthorpe. The circumstances of the crash are under investigation. Security Aviation was one of the companies flying charters between Unalaska and Anchorage during the month-long flight suspension following October's fatal plane crash. The Museum of the Aleutians is hosting a public lecture tonight. Speaker Jim Thompson is an oceanographer at the University of Washington. He says his research is focused on waves in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas up north.
I'm trying to understand what's happening to the ocean waves as the sea ice is retreating and reducing. And there's some really big, clear signals coming out of this work. And there's a lot less sea ice than there used to be. And that's a very clear signal, especially in the summer, right? This ice always retreats a bit in the summer, and now the retreat is just dramatic. And so with that dramatic retreat, there's a lot more open water and a lot more space to make waves. So we call that the fetch. And there's this big, enormous fetch in the Beaufort Sea that didn't used to be there. And so if a storm comes through, it just kicks up these really big waves that didn't used to be in the Western Arctic. And we're measuring waves that are sometimes up to 20 feet now, and that's a new thing that the Arctic didn't have 20 years ago. So we've been studying that, and this most recent trip was trying to understand what are some of the coastal impacts of that increasing wave climate.
Thompson's lecture is free and open to the community. It starts tonight at 6 o'clock at the Museum of the Aleutians. Former Unalaska Mayor Frank Kelty has officially retired after almost 40 years as a local official. But before he made his move to Southern California, Kelty sat down with KUCB's Laura Craigle to discuss his long career. It began in the late 60s when he moved from Washington to Alaska to find seasonal work as a seafood processor. At first, Kelty just needed enough money to settle a $7,000 debt from a car accident, where he hit a 55 Buick without insurance. But he says he quickly fell in love with Unalaska and made it his home.
We lived and worked on the ship that was moored up in East Channel, which is right across from the Alyeska plant.
And what was the ship's name?
East Point. The same name as the company. So it was the East Point ship. And it was an old World War II Navy YO, which is yard oiler. And we built this dock, and then we went in and renovated these buildings and put a crab plant operation on shore. At $2.25 an hour is what I made in those days in 1971, 72, as just a regular worker. It took a while to pay off that $7,000 plus the $1,000 fine. So I kind of fell in love with the remoteness of this place. It was quite the adventure, you know, renovating these World War II buildings, finding all kinds of World War II artifacts, cans of World War II beer underneath floorboards and cigarettes and love letters or Dear John letters. But as I stated earlier, the Mackinac side, we had no city services at all. But we were paying 2% landing tax on crab. We were paying property taxes. And so how I ended up getting involved with politics is I said, I'm going to get on the city council and I'm going to do something about this lack of services we have.
And so at that time, you and everybody at the city started working on expanding those services and building infrastructure, you know, upgrading the World War II era water utilities and things like that, right? Like, especially as more fish plants started setting up shop and the community and the port really started growing.
That was kind of the start of the quality of life stuff that we focused on the city side. And the revenues from groundfish, like by 1988, 89, the money was coming in, you know, really good and more than we had imagined. So one of the first projects I was focused on as mayor when I became mayor in 1991 was the road paving. Those roads were just abominable, and we spent so much maintenance money on that. Remember when we brought Wally Hickle out here in 1991 or 92 when he was governor, and I bounced him around in a little bus, and I said, you know, we need some help with these roads. You know, a lot of people say, oh, Kelty, you're going to ruin the village atmosphere of the community if we have paved roads. Everybody will be driving 50 miles an hour, and we'll lose that village atmosphere. But I said, hey, we got a growing industry. People want to have decent vehicles on the island so they don't have a bunch of junkers that are left all over town.
It sounds like there was debate, though, right, about what direction the community should go and how development of industry should be handled.
You know, there was pluses and minuses. I think the pluses far outweighed the minuses because generated the revenue that allowed us to upgrade our community, get roads paved, quality schools, facilities built, bike trails. At the same time, I remember signing a check for a couple million dollars for the clinic when we started the clinic project, which is also one of our first buildings of quality of life. City Hall was built in 94. We would do a project and pay it out of our reserves, cash money, no debts taking on. And then in 95, 96 was the PCR. Down the road at the Public Works was 97 or 98. And then the last projects I was mayor of the first time was library and museum.
And before I ask you about your second stint as mayor, you did work for the city in another role first as the fisheries resource analyst. And I know you took on that post after retiring from your job as a plant manager. And I know you got very into fisheries policy, like pollock rationalization.
That was a big battle. And then we had the next big rationalization program, which was the crab rationalization program that I was heavily involved in. That was a very important program because it saved lives. I had at least two boatloads of crew members that I was associated with when I was a crab plant manager that died on these reefs and other vessels that had good friends that died. I was really a proponent. The benefit I would see with a reduced fleet that we were seeing already in the pollock fishery with the race for fish was over, you had more time to organize your processing, the products you could develop. We slowed down that fishery. It was way overbuilt. We used to have 250 boats for red crab seasons, and now we're down to around 70.
There'd be 250 of those boats just in the waters here.
It used to be like a city out there with them on anchor waiting to get offloaded. So you just had this mass of boats and dead loss and just chaos for 6 to 8 weeks straight. So it was really critical to get that fishery under control. But being involved with the fisheries meetings, not to brag, but I was like one of the first times where you had community members and city council members going to every meeting. And I think that was important because the community's livelihood would be on the line. The longshoremen, the population at the school, the support sector businesses in the community, they're all dependent on the resources of the Bering Sea. So it was always important to be out front like that.
And speaking to sort of being out front, you did retire from fisheries and from politics for about 6 months before you ran again for city council and then ran again for the mayor's office. And in this term, you know, a lot of policy has moved forward. You survived a recall election. So how was it kind of getting back into office this time around?
You know, I ran into a few issues, but I still think we've got some things that I thought were important. Getting the fire and police department separated, I think it's going to be a win-win. Getting alternative energy towers, I wish I had more time to keep working on that. Being part of the last part of the UMC $40 million project. And then on the side, I was doing my school board stuff for about 6 years. I'm really sad to leave the school board because something is really important. Since I had three granddaughters in school and my daughter graduated from Unalaska High School. So it's always been a near and dear to my heart, and we're so proud that it's one of the top schools in the state.
And now that you are retiring to California, how are you feeling? I know, you know, that you have family here and you'll be back to visit for sure, but you've been in Unalaska a long time, and I imagine it's got to be something to finally step away.
I tell you, when the date came for signing up, I was going through biting my fingernails and walking around. What am I doing? My name's not on the ballot for the first time ever. But this has been my whole adult life has been in this community. I love it dearly. I'm probably going to cry my eyes out. But I'm thinking about maybe I'll join the Democratic Party in Palm Desert. Of course, I don't think there's very many Democrats down there. But I can always do that. Maybe I'll send you an article sometime that Frank Kelty's on the City Council of Palm Desert, California.
That was former Unalaska Mayor Frank Kelty speaking about his decision to retire after almost 40 years as a local official. 58 mushers have signed up for the 2020 Iditarod. It promises to be a competitive field with six former champions registered to run the 1,000-mile race, along with numerous other top teams. Among the winners returning to the trail in March are recent winners Pete Kaiser of Bethel, Norwegian Jor Olsen, and Seward's Mitch Seavey. Past four-time winners Lance Mackey, Jeff King, and Martin Boozer are also signed up. So far, there are 12 rookies slated to run as well. One noticeable name missing from the roster is Dallas Seavey. The four-time champion has not competed in the Iditarod since a scandal in 2017 after four dogs on his team tested positive for a banned substance, although race officials have since apologized for how the incident was handled. Since then, there have been substantial changes in the Iditarod Trail Committee's board and governing rules. Monday was the last day for mushers to sign up without paying a late fee. Potential competitors have until February to decide if they want to sign up. This year's trail follows the northern route for the first time since 2016, leaving Willow on March 8th and heading through Ruby, Galena, and New Lotto along the way to the Norton Sound coast. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.